This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live at the Pint, Jasper and 109th Street. We invite you by to check everything out until 2 o'clock today and even afterwards. Great place to drop by and have a bite to eat on a Saturday afternoon. 4-1 McGill over the U of A. Damn, they've scored two really quick goals and looking difficult now for the Golden Bears. The Rangers up on Boston 1-0. That's in the third period now. And that's a very close, tight game. We'll keep you updated on that. An item that isn't going to be close or tight is probably Flames and Oilers. Game 75 for Edmonton tonight. The Oilers can't score, and they can give up goals in bunches. They've been outscored 34-7 in the last eight games, and were outshot 30-12 in a 4-0 loss to St. Louis on Thursday. It was a low point of the season. The lines tonight, Vandevelde between Eberle and Hartikainen, Cogliano between Pajärvi and Omark. O'Mara will be centering Jones and Reddix, and Fraser between Jacques and McIntyre, and that's from a Dan Tenser tweet this morning. Email me if there's an update on that. You can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. We're running out of positives to talk about in terms of the Oilers. There's still Eberle, Pajärvi, Petrie's looking good. Dubnyk will hopefully start tonight, give the team a chance to win. The Flames have lost three straight, six of their last seven games. They're 1-4-2 to fall to 10th seed out west with 85 points. Calgary is two behind Anaheim for the conference's eighth and final spot, and the Flames are 1 point behind ninth place Dallas. The Ducks visit Chicago tonight. Stars play in Nashville. Calgary has won three straight games against the Oilers since the Oilers posted a 4-0 home win over the Flames in the season opener. After sweeping all six meetings last year, the Flames are now 10 out of 11 in the series and likely tonight 11 out of 12. The Flames, who are just 15, 16, and 7 as the visiting team this season, have also claimed five of their last seven in Edmonton. Calgary is completing a four-game road trip tonight. And it really is going to be a case of very much the better team. They've got a reason to play for it, and the Oilers are running out the string. This might be a very difficult game for the Edmonton Oilers tonight. Now, in this hour, we're going to be talking to Kent Simpson, analyst of Team 1260's Oil Kings broadcast. We'll discuss last night's Oil Kings Rebels game. It was an outstanding contest. The star of the game was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but it was very close. The Oil Kings played at least even or maybe better, especially in the second period of last night's game. But a couple of quick goals by the Rebels gave them the victory, and Nugent-Hopkins ended up with 4 points on a couple of goals and looked very good, looked all of the first overall pick. We'll look forward to tonight's game with Kent Simpson. Also, Kent Wilson later in the hour from Flames Nation will join us to talk about the massive changes in fortunes for the Flames C since we last talked about 4 weeks ago. And Matt Fenwick, legendary blogger from Battle of Alberta, one of the real innovators of advanced math and the blogosphere, and somebody that we've been following for a long, long time, at least 5 years or more on the blogosphere and on the internet. Very innovative guy. Connor, do we have Matt on the line? Okay, good stuff. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Alan. How's the bar this afternoon?
Good. Where are you today?
I'm at home in between two Timbits games.
So life's confronting you then.
Yeah, actually, possibly some good time on these guys. My son's team played against Ryan Rashog's son's team this morning, and they won. So.
Oh, was Rashog's son, did he trip him or anything? He played a little dirty, or was he okay?
No, it was actually a pretty clean, hard-fought game.
Good stuff. Well, yeah. You know what? We're delighted that you're here, and especially because the Battle of Alberta is a favorite of everybody who reads blogs. And I wanted to ask you about the Flames, because they've had a tremendous run here, and it's looking like it's going to be very close. Will the fan base be satisfied if they finish just short of the goal line?
Satisfied? No, but I think we'll all be... Most of us are happy that the last 2 or 3 months have been a lot more fun than they otherwise would have been. It was looking pretty grim there in mid-December, and, you know, the death march for the rest of the season and whatnot, and their surge has made, being a fan fun, which is, you know, a big part of the point of the thing.
I refuse to believe that Jay Feaster coming in as GM or being named GM is responsible for all that turnaround. What's your best reason why the Flames turned it around so quickly? Is it puck luck turning their way?
That's part of it for sure, Alan. They were better than the 14th or 15th place team earlier in the season, and they're not as good as the team that went, 16-6-4 or whatever for that stretch after that. But, mostly the hockey gods, I think.
the Flames should bank 2 points tonight. After that, it's I think it's home to Anaheim, on the road to St. Louis and Colorado. Then they finish up at home against the Oilers again and Canucks.
You got it.
Can this team run the table?
It's possible. I mean, I think St. Louis is a little better team than their stature in the standings right now, as you may have noticed the other night, or even from their game against L.A. the other last weekend. So that looks to me like probably the hard one, notwithstanding the one against Vancouver for the final game, which, you know, now the best case scenario is they have to beat the Canucks on the last day of the season. That's pretty dismal, but it's possible. Sure, why not?
Do they need to do it to make the playoffs, do you think?
I think so. The bare minimum where they maybe have kind of a 10 or 20% chance, I think it's probably 10 out of the next 12 points. 11 might get them up to around 50-50, and then 12 points, suddenly you're kind of over 75 and a bit more confident.
If they do make it, obviously it'll be 8th place and they'll play Vancouver. I've seen a couple of the Flames-Canucks games this year, and they've been pretty tight. I mean, the Flames have played them pretty much straight up. Do you think that's a series? I mean, it would be an upset, obviously, but do you think that's a series the Flames can stay in?
I think they could make it fun. I mean, the Canucks are a much better team, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure that most Canucks fans and maybe some of the players would be a little terrified about playing the Flames in the first round, just for karma reasons, if nothing else.
And obviously, if they got by Vancouver, they could probably go a long way, similar to what the Oilers did in 2006. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's possible. Suddenly, whoever they play after the Canucks is not going to be as good a team as the Canucks, right?
So yep.
That gives you something. But I don't know. The Canucks seem pretty good this year, don't you think? I mean, I get a bit of a kind of a Flames in 89 type of vibe off of them. They're just kind of the unstoppable march to the President's Trophy, and then I don't know, a lot of good players.
No, I find it particularly galling to say, but I mean, they are absolutely the flat-out favorite to come out of the West, and they look
galling, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's just there's something wrong with the universe. You know, it'll even out somehow, but I don't know what it is. With the success that the Flames have had, and they got a lot of veterans under contract, and they're going to be a cap team again next year, no matter what Jay Feaster does. But do you think they'll change less than they would have in midseason if that roll towards, you know, 14th place in the West had continued?
Well, they probably would have traded away a couple of their pending UFAs near the trade deadline if they hadn't made the run. So, but who really knows what they could have gotten for them? I guess probably Glenn Cross was the biggest piece, but, you know, value is certainly less valuable than Penner, I would think. And so they could have picked up a bit of pieces for the far future, but in the off season, it's hard to say. I mean, really, I can't imagine that the last 3 months would have really changed a lot of Feaster's opinion on what the team is, or in alternatively, Feaster might not be the GM, right? He's interim, and they were quite deliberate about saying that they were going to hire someone after the season, and maybe it will be him, and maybe it won't, but I don't think that the run has fooled anyone into thinking that, oh, they're a couple moves away from the Stanley Cup. I mean, they need to get a bit younger, for sure.
They've got, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tanguay, Glenn Cross, Morrison, Babchuk are all UFAs at the end of the season. Is that correct?
Yeah, there might be one or two others, too, but yeah.
I think the Flames would like potentially all four of those guys to return, but they have some cap issues. If you had to pick one or two from that group you'd like to see return to the Flames, which one would they be?
I think probably Tanguay. I mean, Glenn Cross over the next 5 years is probably going to be the best player, right? But he's probably earned a big contract, and I expect him, I almost hope he does, but at any rate, I expect him to go out into the market and get a nice 5 or 6 year deal for a lot of money, and I think that's probably the best scenario for everyone.
Right.
Tanguay might be happy with a couple years with a little less money, just because he's got a good situation here and had a lot of success and all that.
As an Oilers fan, Morrison
are fine, and they've been better than I thought they would be when they signed up, but they're pretty replaceable.
as an Oilers fan going back almost 40 years, I keep waiting for the Flames to trade one of three players, Iginla, Kiprusoff, or Regier, because to me that will represent the rebuild is on. Do you see any of those three leaving this summer?
I think it's possible. I don't think Iginla's getting traded. I think it's possible that Regier will get traded if they get the right offer. And I would love to see them trade Kipper if they got something, a deal that could even provide cover for trading him away, right? Like a draft pick or an okay prospect or something, just to get rid of his cap hit and kind of move on. But the way the local media talks and the organization and stuff, they still think Kipper's a Vezina caliber goalie. So I think we're stuck with him for another couple years.
This is Nation Radio, live at the Pint, Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. We're at Jasper and 109th in conversation with Matt Fenwick from the Battle of Alberta. Changing gears a little bit here. Which advanced stats do you use when you're evaluating a player and those Flames players and teams over the years? Which ones do you value the most?
Well, the Fenwick number, probably. No, I'm kidding.
I'm about to ask you about that.
I like those. I probably have used them less in the last couple of years. Now that they're easier to use, I used to use the raw numbers that were on Time on Ice, like Ferrari stuff. But now that they're on Desjardins and rated per 60 and relative and all that, I haven't used it as much. But in general, starting position for sure, and finishing position. A lot of people don't really think about that, but the kind of the plotters out there who manage to finish the shift in the opposing end and get a whistle from the goalie tying it up or what have you, they help their teammates out a lot, because then the coach can put out an offensive player, or it's more likely that the next shift is going to get a scoring chance, right?
Right.
Guys will always end up in their own end with a whistle, skate off. Now the next shift has a big hill to climb. So I quite like zone finish. But the shots on goal and the possession stats are worthwhile for sure. They're not the be-all, end-all, but, I mean, a lot of people have gone very wrong by ignoring them just in hilarious ways in the last couple of years even so.
Interesting. I appreciate your viewpoint on that. Now, since you brought it up, those who are familiar with Corsi number or Rel Corsi will be interested to know about the Fenwick number. So can you, in two sentences or less, explain Fenwick?
It's just Corsi with the block shot for and against excluded. And essentially, I didn't name it. back when we were talking about Corsi in the first place, I said that I thought it made more sense to exclude block shots, because insofar as you're going to use it over, say, a long period of time to compare different players, then if there's no difference between two players except for how often they block shots or how often they get shots blocked, I think that makes a difference in whether they're creating or preventing scoring chances. And so you ought to exclude block shots to get kind of a better idea, because the idea, of course, was to have an objective proxy for scoring chances. So over the long term, I think you exclude block shots. Now, over the course of a couple games, or you look at one game and one team blocked 20 shots and the other team blocked 5 shots, well, the team that blocked 20 shots, that's kind of bad, because that means they were in their own end the whole time, right? And that's
right.
Not going to be sustainable. But blocking shots and having your shot not get blocked that you're attempting is an actual skill, I think. So that's where that came from.
If we could live in a world...
22 sentences or less.
Right. If we could live in a world where all 30 teams had someone tracking actual scoring chances, like real, scoring chances, do you think that, and based on who was on the ice, do you think that would have a value over a period of years? We'd be able to track specific players and how well they do team to team, age-wise, all those things?
Oh, no question. I don't... I think if you try and refine it further, like, for example, David Staples, individual scoring chances and trying to break out what you see on the ice, I think you probably lose more than you gain by doing that. So if you knew scoring chances over the long term, I think that would be very informative. And I certainly have a strong suspicion that's been borne out by Gabe Desjardins and other people that they correlate pretty well with goals over the long term and with winning. So that's useful. And wouldn't it be fascinating to be able to go backwards with some of that stuff, eh?
That's one of my dreams, you know, just because you can't. Nothing's on video and you wouldn't be able to catch it all. But I'd like to even do, I know that we were talking about Pat McLean earlier, Black Dog Hates Skunks. He did a great item on the 1972 Canada-Russia series.
Yeah, and fantastic.
I read it like it was, you know, I mean, like a kid. It was wonderful stuff. And I think that's the sort of thing that maybe we could do in very small samples like that. And it would tell us a lot about how the game has changed, better or worse, and what we maybe thought we knew about those legends like Phil Esposito and
right.
You know, measure
well,
there.
I do have Game 7 of the 86 Smythe Final on DVD, so I might try that one out and see just how lucky the Flames got or what.
There you go. You know what? We could do that for the old Oilers games, too. Hey, Matt Fenwick, where can people read you?
Most often on Twitter, which is at Fenwick Matt, but also battlesalberta.ca. I probably put up something there once every week or two.
Usually baseball standings.
You could always come back in the future.
All right. Matt, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Alan.
All right. That's Matt Fenwick, who's a legendary guy on the blogosphere. And Battle of Alberta is, I hope they're little resurrection going on right now, but that was a terrific meeting place and some great minds there. And as you can tell, a very well-spoken individual, and we appreciate his time and we'll no doubt have him back again. Now, Connor, is it now 4-2 McGill? Am I right? I think it's a 4-2 score right now for McGill over the University of Alberta Golden Bears. We'll give you an update on that. There's about a minute left in the Ranger-Bruin game, and it's still 1-0. A Derek Steppen goal early. It was definitely in the first period. That's all. And that's basically it. Boston's got 26 shots on goal. The Rangers, 23. It's been a tight game, and that one goal so far is standing up. This is Nation Radio. We're live with the Pint, Jasper in 109th Street. Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. We have a couple more guests to go before the 2 o'clock hour. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation is next, and then Kent Simpson, Team 1260 analyst. Stay tuned.